Man, you're a fucking excellent high fiver.
Hi, everybody. I'm Jim.
I'm Ryan.
Miss Gina.
And this is the Concept Crucible Podcast.
How's it going?
It's going pretty well. Thanks, Ryan.
Yeah, not bad. I see that you have a notification on your calendar.
Shut up. Listen, I have an important appointment at 11:30 tonight for a work thing. I'm not kidding.
I guess we better get the show underway.
Yes, indeed. So, Jada, you are our guest, and we neglected to introduce you because we're awful human beings.
I got distracted. I saw something flash.
Shut up. This is Gina, and you are joining us because you are our expert on today's topic, which is headcanon.
I don't know if that's a compliment.
You are certainly the... Actually, no, you're not. You're probably not the leading person in my life, because I know a bunch of doctoral students that study it, but...
Yes.
You were the one who created my largest and sort of widest headcanon.
So that you're blaming me.
No, I'm crediting you.
Oh,
crediting you. I enjoy it. So Icebreaker, what is your biggest, weirdest, like widest headcanon where you're most deeply invested?
Well, do you think maybe we should hold and explain what headcanon is first?
Icebreaker goes first, Ryan. Fine.
Well, I'm just saying, maybe for the folks at home who are a little unsure of what maybe we can give a Cole's Notes definition.
Or a Cliff's Notes in America.
Or a Cliff's Notes.
Headcanon is stories you tell about characters. So, as opposed to role-playing, which are stories you tell about your character, these are other characters. So, in Mass Effect, for example, you might tell stories about your crewmates.
Yes. Yeah.
And their rendezvous. Or, you know, so video games... TV shows, movies.
It's either picking up where a story, any story, any media story, either ends or there's blackout spots. So if there's a time gap or you continue the story in your head after a movie has ended, or create origin stories for certain characters, it usually starts, or sort of the spark for a lot of people with headcanons, is a romance side thing where you take two characters and you like to put them together, and in your head you think that they're dating, or in your head they have this relationship going on behind the scenes, and hence headcanon.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not canon in the story arc.
But it's canon in my heart.
It is canon in my heart and canon in my head. Yeah, so...
But and we have deeply invested elaborate headcanon in lots of things. But the question for the icebreaker is the place where you have invested deepest.
Deepest. Okay.
I will go first, even though usually we make the guest go first, because I'm sitting in the middle in the guest spot. If you are listening, I'm sitting in the middle. That's why I'm so effing loud. But... mine is definitely Skyrim. Like, I have a lot of video game headcanon and movie headcanon, but Skyrim, like, nonstop. I got 900 hours in that game. I have, like, enemies and allies and, like, deeply invested notions in all of these characters in the world. You know, like, I will never, ever give Sven the time of day, because the first thing Sven ever asked me to do was take a letter to the girl he liked, lying about her other paramour, like her other suitor, rather. And I'm like, dude, that's really not cool. And I told him that, and he's like, just take the letter, take the quest. So I got up to her, and I had the option to be like, hey, Sven told me to give you this letter to tell you it was from your other suitor. Here you go. Figure it out. She's like, good, not talking to Sven anymore. See ya. Ironically, once you finish her quest, you can marry her instead of her other suitor. But, yeah, like, I have all these relationships with characters in there, and, you know, I have devoted an unreasonable amount of time giving, not just imagining what they do in their off time, but in the game, giving them things to do in their off time. You know, like, here's your house, this is where you live. Stay here. Gina.
So anybody that knows me is going to assume that the first thing that I would say is Mass Effect. And that is probably where I recognized I started building headcanons and fanfictions and things like that in my head. Mm-hmm. And it's probably the most elaborate one that I have, but if you're asking for deepest investment, it is certainly my playable character of Hawk in Dragon Age 2.
Oh, man.
And that is one where I have... The headcanon in that is so strong... and it mirrors the storyline. It's just those additions. It's there. If you haven't played Dragon Age 2, the story takes place in sort of chapter-esque type sections. And there's even a 1 to 2 year, 3 year gap sometimes in between each of those sections. So the headcanon comes in sometimes, you know, in between what happened in the between time, what happened, you know, the night after your lover ran away. And things like that. So I've been so invested in that one that I have actually stopped the game because something in the game wrecked my headcanon to the point where I had to rewind and start over and go forward to the point where, and this was my deepest, darkest secret for many years, is that I never finished playing Dragon Age 2. Because I knew a key ending piece that involved another character and, spoiler, the death of another character that I couldn't face. My headcanon was so invested that I could not face in-game carrying out this cutscene. So I left it and sat it on the shelf for years. And it was actually, I finally got the guts up to go back and finish it this year. And I turn on my Xbox 360, which has been moved 2 times since then, and it red ringed, and my game is just lost.
Now you'll never know.
I will never know, except for thankfully the power of YouTube and that I
double spoilers for a game that came out literally years ago. Anders deserved to die. He's a monster.
I couldn't do it. I'm sorry.
I did it with a smile on my face and a song in my heart.
No. You monster.
Mm-hmm. Ryan?
I suppose to some who are listening to the podcast or watching us, it's probably no surprise that I really like Power Rangers. Maybe not Linkara like Power Rangers, but I do very much like Power Rangers.
Link to Linkara's History of the Power Rangers in the show notes.
Yeah, it's strange how he caught up with what's currently broadcasting. There's no new episodes anywhere. I'm a little heartbroken. But I liked Power Rangers, and sometime, I think I was still in high school, but I remember it was a little while back, I ran into somebody else's fan fiction of a Power Rangers team, and this was pre-Dino Thunder, so it would have been high school, and so I liked reading that person's fan fiction. But I wanted to do my own, but I wanted to integrate it more with the story. And I always liked Adam, the second Black Ranger, then became Green Zeo Ranger, then Green mm-hmm. Turbo Ranger. I always liked him as a character. So I thought, would it be cool if he mentored a new team? Which then conveniently, when Dino Thunder came out, they did that exact idea with Tommy Oliver, you know, mm-hmm. mentoring the new team. And so it was one of those things of like, okay, well, how do I create a new system of Power Rangers and still tap into the morphing grid? And I'm like, well, wouldn't it be cool if you take like the Lightspeed Rescue idea of a civilian outfit, but how do you get a civilian outfit to tap into it without like being super genius and just making stuff up as you go? And I'm like, well, like how do I get them into it? And I'm like, okay, well, there's always the Zeo Zords. They weren't destroyed. But that seems like too much of a cop-out. What if, like, this guy was, like, a scientist and he wanted to, like, his wife had died in one of the monster attacks and he wanted to make Power Rangers and make it his own and stuff. And, like, wait a second. Thank God Wikipedia was around. Like, the Dragon Zord had never been destroyed. It was still sitting in Angel Grove Bay. What if he, like, was diving and he found it and he got into the cockpit and he was able to reverse engineer it and like tap into the power grid that way, and like he started it, and then he and Adam were, and I just went from there.
So I would like to point out that, first off, I like how you say pre-Dino Thunder, like that's a period in time that all of us will immediately recognize. Power Rangers timeline in the show notes if I can find one. But also, like, I would like to point out that you told that story in the pre-show, and I am no less, like, happy and joyous at your second telling of it, because it is incredible.
And I think that's, like, that kind of illustrates what kind of headcanon can do. So, I'm sitting here, and I watched Power Rangers in that I know enough, but I, you know, that was technobabble to me, like 90% or more. But at the same
time...
You can
tell Zord from a Zed, though.
Maybe. I'm sitting here listening to it, but you, that's the thing. You get invested with it. The stories, they're percolating in your head. Years later, you still remember going through this. And that's what headcanon kind of does, is, mm-hmm. is you're making and creating these stories in your head and going forward with what was behind the scenes, what was, you know, afterwards, what came next or what came before, or what came during for it.
Yeah, so I have a lot of elaborate headcanons. I get a lot of them when I'm sick. When I'm sick, I watch, like, just trash action movies. And I try and listen for what's coded in them. Mm. So I remember, I think it was... when I had the flu like a year ago, I watched all the Expendables movies. Which, don't do that. Just, pro tip, don't. You have to be very ill already to not become ill. But I watched all of them and I realized that they make a lot more sense if you imagine that Sylvester Stallone's character, Barney, is just like this old army queen who loves hanging out with big, muscly dudes. And you're just like, oh, that's not banter. They're flirting. Like, they're obvious. Most of them are, like, obviously straight, or at the very least, you know, straight presenting. But it's like they seem to entertain Barney's, like, harmless flirting the whole time. Is, you know, their mentor and employer and benefactor in some cases, because these are mostly, like, guys, and it is pretty much all guys who. All they know how to do in life is break stuff.
Now, so there is nothing more satisfying, like if you're doing headcanon in the middle of a show or middle of a series or something, and then that headcanon comes true.
Kori-sama?
Right? And yeah, yes.
Oh.
But I mean, I'm just imagining the scenario you just gave, and if that's the next movie, then it would just be...
Are you kidding? I thought for sure that when in Expendables 2, when... Stallone throws down with Jean-Claude Van Damme. Like, watch that scene. I'll dig it up on YouTube if I can find it. And there's a lot of double entendres in that where you're like, are they just going to make out? Like, for serious, are they just going to make out right now?
I like, this might deviate a little bit from headcanon, but I like trailer recuts and stuff. And they had the one where it was Obi-Wan and Anakin fighting, but they threw Whitney Houston behind it. And everything just seemed so much more passionate.
Oh, man. I get, for mine, most of mine is games, though. Like, when I was playing XCOM, I'll come up with a little, like, you develop stories for all of your soldiers. And who they are and like what they're going to get back at. Like, I definitely had that rookie where I was like, listen, rookie, I need you to become a medic. I only have one medic and it's Hans and he's wounded. I need more medics. You can't become a heavy or a sniper. I have too many of those. You need to be a medic. Swear to God, if you are not a medic, I'm going to take you back to the base, cut your arms and legs off and turn you into a robot person, which is a thing you can do in XCOM. And so when they turned into a heavy, they became one of my mech troopers. They rocked face. I was like, I do not regret cutting off your arms and legs, sir. As I promote you to colonel.
I think games, especially a role-playing game, really lends itself to it because you're adding... And there's a fine line between, I think we were talking about before the show, about role-playing versus headcanon. Mm-hmm. And I, the definition that came up with is that headcanon, or sorry, role playing is where you're making up a story for yourself, and then headcanon is where you're making up a story for your companions or the NPCs or the characters, maybe even somebody else is playing. I play an online game with my partner, and we have two characters, and I have a whole headcanon about how we met and how we've dated and stuff like that. And he's sitting there playing going, sounds good. I like that. But it's just, it's all in my head, and it's extenuating that. Or finding an object in a video game, in a fantasy setting, if there's a weapons drop or it's a special rare item, instead of just, ooh, I found a rare item, making a story of how you actually came to have that object.
So with it. Go ahead,
Ron. I was just going to say, like, I don't... So for me, when we were talking about headcanon before, I seem to be the one that did it the least out of the group of us. I tend to allow the imposed narrative to be the one. But I just, as you were saying that, I do remember in, like, Diablo, because all of the items were all set items with history, but I didn't know the history. So I'd sometimes try to work out in my head, you know, based on the name or the description, you know, like that kind of thing. So it's I forgot about that entirely. So yeah, it's when you fill in all those details.
Thinking about items, the afternoon that Gina introduced me to the notion of headcanon, I forget where we were going and what we were doing, but
I remember you stopped dead in your tracks. I remember that.
Well, no. The thing that stopped me dead in my tracks is we were talking about Dragon Age, because as you mentioned, you're super into Dragon Age, and so am I. We did a brief Dragon Age Let's Play way back, like 5 years ago. That was where we discovered that I had no headcanon, because Ryan Walsh, I had a different Ryan at that time, not this Ryan, a different one. But he was like, he was deeply immersed in all of the story, and I was like, what are you talking about? I'm playing this on Nightmare, and I'm whooping ass. Next fight. What's this? Treasure? Yeah. He's like, do you read the codexes? I'm like, totally. They give me XP. Next fight. But was this necklace that you get from a character in the game. You, like, find it, and you give it to him, and he gives it back to you, and it becomes, like, a magical item that he can use. And you, like, swore up and down that he gave it to you. And I'm like, no, you find it in a drawer in this cat. Like, I know I put 200 hours into this game. I played it, like, 6 times. I know where this drawer is. Because I'm like, that necklace got sweet stats. Of course I'm going to find it. Dig it out. Get that scene. Get that necklace. Throw it on. Sweet stats. Done. Next fight. And you're like, no, token of love.
Yes. Yes.
We're super deeply involved.
It was Alistair's token of love. And I had actually, my headcanon was so strong that I had forgotten that that's actually what you do. And I had played the game actually a couple times. And each time I ran, got the necklace out of the drawer. You're right. I know exactly where it is too. Right? Because I have to get it to give it to Alistair to give it to me. So that my headcanon is complete, that he has given me this token of affection.
Next fight!
It sounds like it's the Mandela effect almost. You're remembering an alternate reality.
I am. I'm making, well, I have, that's where the headcanon came up as well. The one of the biggest ones that I had was Mass Effect was one of the first ones that I did. It's the most elaborate one that I had. And spoiler alert for Mass Effect 3, at the end, you have to make a decision, and one of the decisions I made was to remove technology from the universe. But one of my companions...
Like pants? Pants are technology.
Okay, so more electronic. There's like a massive EMP.
Oh, okay, sort of. So like everything else goes, but pants remain.
Or skirts.
You sound like you're in the pocket of big pants.
It's possible.
Unless they're like hologram pants and skirts.
Ooh, oh, I would hate to be wearing my hologram pants when that
and
happens.
And then just poof, gone.
What is it? Okay. Is that draft a hologram? I hope it's a holographic draft.
Anyway.
Anybody? Next fight.
So one of the companions in Mass Effect is an AI, and she's a robot. And in the DLC, she comes and gives you a gift. And she all it says in the game is that she was shopping in the market, saw you, and decided to give it to you. But it is the weirdest gift possible because you are the space marine and she gives you a ring. There is no possibility of any romantic interest with this person. There's no ties to it. And she just saw this shiny ring. And there's not even a jokey thing about, oh, it's shiny, I wanted to give it to you. And that it's inexplicable why she gives you this ring. So the only explanation has to be that she foresaw this, you know, the quick destruction of electronic, you know, whatever. And she uploaded herself into a memory chip that is in that ring. And Shepard will find it years later and able to extract Edie back into the real world.
May I offer an alternate explanation?
Absolutely.
The ring called out to him.
No, I was going to go with your AI, Edie, is out in the marketplace shopping on the Citadel, sees you, buys that ring. You're like, why'd you buy me this? She's like, well, I heard it was your favorite store on the Citadel. I'm a monster.
You are. You really are.
But, oh my goodness. I did hear that. You said it. You said it was your favorite store.
Well, see, now this is the thing about headcanon. This is my headcanon. It's in my head. You cannot take it away from me.
I don't wish to spoil your headcanon.
Oh, yes, you do.
No. A little.
Well, see, but now, see, I've added that. When you do ask, that is Edie's explanation.
Yeah.
But my original plan still holds true.
Yeah, see, no, it's just, down. It I'm down for that.
Yeah.
Have you ever, especially now that you're introducing me to the idea of headcanon...
Like, that's the thing. Once you realize it, you just start seeing
it. It snowballs.
No, but have you ever heard somebody else's headcanon and, like, it's now you're primed for it, and then you go to watch something, and that's all you can see?
Oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, it happens a lot with shipping or... and shipping where two characters are in a relationship together. Or somebody says it, and now that's all you can see. So a big one is Sherlock, right? The BBC version... That's out. Everybody loves Cumberbatch and Freeman together as a couple. And then you start looking at that, and then you can't help it. You're watching that, and even if you don't ship them together, it infiltrates your brain, and you start seeing, and you start smiling, and you sort of, it's in your head, but it's just sort of at the backbone. It increases the enjoyment. And in a way, the interaction you have with the characters.
I do it because I like ruining things for people and people's experience of them. So, I mean, when people, like, embrace that headcanon... ooh, here's a good one. There's a Killing Joke animated movie coming out soon. I apologize for bringing up the F word on the podcast, but lots and lots of people, nerds, fans, have a headcanon that the Killing Joke is where Barbara Gordon, who gets shot and becomes paralyzed in the Killing Joke, becomes a strong character. That's where she overcomes her trauma. And grows into being like one of the central characters in the DC hero universe, and that's headcanon because it's not true. It doesn't happen in the book at all. What happens is that she gets shot and she's never heard from again in basically the whole book. And instead, it's all about Batman and the Joker in this weird like standoff, and where she actually becomes a cool, like, fleshed out, strong, awesome character is in stories like Gotham Knights, and later on, like. Full on in Gail Simone's run on Birds of Prey, which lasted forever and is awesome. I picked that up from Gail Simone's Twitter like a week ago, and it was a thing I've been mulling over. But yeah, it is the kind of headcanon that sort of actively misinterprets a thing in the way that you want it to be rather than the way that it is.
It can be a coping mechanism.
Yeah.
Absolutely can be a coping mechanism. I didn't like how that story ended, so that I'm going awful. To... that was more of a general statement. But yes, specifically that. Coping so that you can... You know, I don't like how that ended. I'm going to sort of put this in my own head. And there is a difference between going completely off script versus following the narrative, which you said, Ryan, in that... You're following the script along, and you're building on it. You're giving it those additions. to it.
Well, it's one of the things I think that makes headcanon awesome. It lets you tell your own story. It lets you build on a work that's already there. It makes games more fun. I've gotten to the point now where I can't really play an RPG unless I have like a story to go along with it, which makes it really hard to get into new ones. Like, I've been trying to get into Pillars of Eternity for like a year now, and I just haven't been able to, because I haven't played the game enough to know what it's about, to know what my story's about.
I'm actually having that problem with Dragon Age 3. I delayed it for many life reasons, and I've just started playing it, and I'm finding myself that because I was so invested with my headcanon and my role-playing with Hawk in the second game, that I'm almost resentful of the new character. And I don't know what this character's story is. I don't know anything. And I don't care. I only want to play this game till I get to the point where I can interact with my Hawk again from the second game. So it's this bizarre thing. I don't have a hook. I can't. And I think you're right, too. If I find that I can't sort of continue stories, or I can't see myself, I don't want to use fantasizing or being creative about the story in my head, I kind of lose interest.
Yeah, and well, especially because I can go back to those games or that media where I do have that, and it feels good. Like, it feels like coming home.
Yeah.
We have a note here to talk about why headcanon is awesome, and one of the things that I realized, I don't know, about 10 minutes ago, is that one of the other reasons that we didn't talk about in the pre-show is that it lets you see things and find things that aren't there that need to be there. And the best example of this is, and it comes up all like as a gag all the time on the internet, but is all of the gay or bi shipping that goes on in movies and video games and in those fandoms. Like, it's sort of cool to like make fun of Tumblr or DeviantArt about that, but at the same time, when you don't have those relationships represented in your favorite media, you are sort of required to invent them.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, and especially because a lot of media is coded like that, it's pretty easy to.
Yeah.
I mean, even to the point where it gets really into like the Supernatural shipping sort of central thing. I'll try and dig up a link from Elise on that.
There's a fabulous short run anime that I fell in love with called Tiger and Bunny, and it's a superhero anime. And there, when I went into it, I saw the first little bit, and then I went in and looked at the fandom, and of course everybody, the popular thing to do is ship the two main male characters together, and I refused to do it. But the longer I watched the show, the more interested I actually became in that relationship and wanted there to be something else underneath it. But I think what actually drew me to pushing there, wanting to be a subtle dynamic between these two characters and a love that was growing, is because the unfortunate part of that anime is that there is a tropey, flamboyant, presumed gay character that is just, it's an awful, awful stereotype. It's unfortunately typical sort of that genre and that where that came from, that trope, I mean. So because that was so ugly to me, I think that's what lent me to eventually say, actually, yeah, I do put, you know, Barnaby and Tiger together, because I want that subtle love and relationship that they grow in the show.
Yeah, like I always think of Supernatural with Dean and Castiel, or Sam and Dean, which is sort of an impressively interesting fandom. But headcanon allows you to find that and find stories and solace and satisfaction in that where otherwise none would be offered. For example, my Terminator headcanon, which I talked about in my headcanon video from Vita, is in Terminator Genesis, which if you haven't seen it again, don't. I was very sick. Very, very sick.
I finally watched it like last week.
Don't do that. No. Do you need a hug, buddy?
I don't know. Like it wasn't as offensive as I thought it was going to be.
So my headcanon is that Kyle Reese travels back in time, as he does in Terminator Genesis, right in the beginning of the movie, and he finds himself confronted with a version of Sarah Connor who is already a warrior, which is what happens in the movie. And it's her and him and Arnold Schwarzenegger, and they kill a T-1000 in like the first 20 minutes, and it's awesome. And then they just keep killing Terminators in that time, and then eventually ride off into the sunset and are like, hey, we're going to have a world where John Connor grows up with a father, and he turns out to be an even bigger super badass instead of literally everything else that happened in that movie. Literally all of it. Yes! Leave your headcanons in the show notes because we wish to absorb them into our own. Make them part of us as we have made ours part of you. Headcanon's delicious. Follow Huck on Instagram or Twitter. Gina, do you have Twitter?
No.
No. Oh, Gina doesn't tweet.
Shetty don't text. Gina don't tweet.
Do what you do. And we'll see you next time. I'm Jim.
I'm Ryan.
Gina.
We're signing off.
Stay awesome.
Fucking hate you. Also, I'm really super glad you didn't hit me in the face. Because I felt that, and that would have fucking hurt. Like, you would have demolished me.
Yep.